"Be comforted," he said to the flower women, "for verily I shall deal with these miscreants in a fitting manner." At this they broke into a shrill babble, repeating tales the bird people of the valley had told them regarding the fortress of the Ispazars, whose walls rose sheerly from a hidden peak, unscaled by man, and were void of portal or window, save in the highmost ramparts, where the flying reptiles went in and out. And they told him other tales concerning the ferocity and cruelty of the Ispazars. Smiling, as if at the chatter of children, he diverted their thoughts to other matters, and told them many stories of odd and curious marvels, and queer happenings in alien worlds. In the meanwhile, he perfected his plan for obtaining entrance to the citadel of the reptilian wizards. The day went by in such divertissements, and, one by one, the three sons of the system fell beyond the valley's rim. The flower women grew inattentive. They began to nod and drowse in the richly darkening twilight, and Wald Webb proceeded with certain preparations that formed an essential part of his scheme. Through his power of second sight, he had determined the identity of the victim whom the reptiles would carry away in their next raid on the morrow. This creature, as it happened, was the one who had sought to ensnare him. Like the others, she was now preparing to fold herself for the night in her voluminous couch of petals. Confiding part of his plan to her, Wald Webb manipulated, in a singular fashion, one of the amulets which he wore, and, by virtue of this manipulation, reduced himself to the proportions of a pygmy. In this state, with the assistance of the drowsy siren, he was able to conceal himself in a hollow space among the petals, and thus embowered like a bee in a rose, he slept securely through the short, moonless night of Voltalop. The dawn awakened him, glowing as if through loosened curtains of ruby and purple. He heard the flower women murmuring sleepily to one another as they opened their blossoms to the early suns. Their murmurs, however, soon changed into shrill cries of agitation and fear, and above the cries there came a vibrant drumming as of great dragon wings. He peered from his hiding place, and saw in the double dawn the descent of the Ispazars, from whose webbed vans a darkness fell on the valley. Nearer they drew, and he saw their cold and scarlet eyes beneath scaly brows, their long, undulant bodies, their lizard limbs and prehensile claws, and he heard the deep, articulate hissing of their voices. Then the petals closed about him blindly, shuddering and constrictive, as the flower women recoiled from the swooping monsters. All was confusion, terror, tumult, but he knew, from his observation of the previous rape, that two of the Ispazars had encircled the flower's stem with their python-like tails, and were pulling it from the ground as a human sorcerer might pull a mandrake plant. He felt the convulsive agony of the disrooted blossom. He heard the lamentable shrieking of her sisters. Then there came a heavier beating of the drum-loud wings, and the feeling of giddy ascension and flight. Through all of this, Wald Webb maintained the utmost presence of mind, and he did not betray himself to the Ispazars. After many minutes, there was a slackening of the headlong flight, and he knew that the reptiles were nearing their citadel. A moment more, and the ruddy gloom of the shut petals darkened and purpled about him as if they had peered from the sunlight into a place of deep shadow. The thrumming of wings ceased abruptly. The living flower was dropped from a height on some hard surface, and Wald Webb was nearly hurled from his hiding place by the violence of her fall. Moaning faintly, twitching a little, she lay where her captors had flung her. The enchanter heard the hissing voices of the reptile wizards, the rough, sharp slithering of their tails on a stone floor as they withdrew. Whispering words of comfort to the dying blossom, he felt the petals relax about him. He crept forth very cautiously, and found himself in an immense, gloomily vaulted hall, whose windows were like the mouths of a deep cavern. The place was a sort of alchemy, a den of alien sorceries and aberrant pharmaceutics. Everywhere in the gloom there were vats, cupels, furnaces, alembics, and mantrasses of unhuman form, bulking and towering colossally to the pygmy eyes of Wald Webb. Close at hand, a monstrous cauldron fumed like a crater of black metal, its curving sides ascending far above the magician's head. None of the Ispazars was in sight, but knowing that they might resume at any minute, he hastened to make ready against them, feeling, for the first time in many years, the thrill of peril and expectation. Manipulating the second amulet, he regained his normal proportions. The room, though still spacious, was no longer a hall of giants, and the cauldron beside him sank and lessened till its rim rose only to his shoulder. He saw now that the cauldron was filled with an unholy mixture of ingredients, among which were finely shredded portions of the missing flower women, together with the gall of chimaeras and the ambergris of leviathans. Heated by unseen fires, it boiled tumultuously, foaming with black, pitchy bubbles, and putting forth a nauseous vapor. With the shrewd eye of a past master of all chemic lore, Wald Webb proceeded to estimate the cauldron's various contents, and was then able to divine the purpose for which the brewage was intended. The conclusion to which he was driven appalled him slightly, and served to heighten his respect for the power and science of the reptile sorcerers. He saw, indeed, that it would be highly advisable to arrest their evolution. After brief reflection, it occurred to him that, in accordance with chemical laws, the adding of certain simple components to the brewage would bring about an eventuation neither desired nor anticipated by the Ispazars. On high tables about the walls of the alchemy, there were jars, flasks, and vials containing subtle drugs and powerful elements, some of which were drawn from the more arcanic kingdoms of nature. Disregarding the moon powder, the coals of starfire, the jellies made from the brains of gorgons, the ichor of salamanders, the dust of lethal fungi, the marrow of sphinxes, and other equally quaint and pernicious matters, the magician soon found the essences that he required. It was the work of an instant to pour them into the seething cauldron, and having done this, he awaited with composure the return of the reptiles. The flower woman, in the meanwhile, had ceased to moan and twitch. Wald Webb knew that she was dead, since beings of this genus were unable to survive when uprooted with such violence from their natal soil. She had folded herself to the face in her straightened petals, as if in a red and blackened shroud. He regarded her briefly, not without commiseration, and at that moment he heard the voices of the seven Ispazars, who had now re-entered the alchemy. They came toward him among the crowded vessels, walking erect in the fashion of men on their short lizard legs, their ribbed and sabled wings retracted behind them, and their eyes glaring redly in the gloom. Two of them were armed with long, sinuous bladed knives, and others were equipped with enormous adamantine pestles to be employed, no doubt, in bruising the flesh of the floral vampire. When they saw the enchanter, they were both startled and angered. Their necks and torsos began to swell like the hoods of cobras, and a great hissing rose among them, like the noise of jetted steam. Their aspect would have struck terror to the heart of any common man, but Wald Webb confronted them calmly, repeating aloud, in low, even tones, a word of sovereign protective power. The Ispazars hurled themselves toward him, some running along the floor with an undulant slithering motion, and others rising on rapid-beating vans to attack him from above. All, however, dashed themselves vainly on the sphere of unseen force he had drawn about him through the utterance of the word of power. It was a strange thing to see them clawing vengefully at the void air, or striking futile blows with their weapons, which rang as if on a brazen wall. Now Perceiving that the man before them was a sorcerer, the reptile magicians began to make use of their own abhuman sorcery. They called from the air great bolts of livid flame, python-shaped, which leapt and writhed incessantly, warring with the sphere of protective power, driving it back as a shield is driven by press of numbers in battle, but never breaking it down entirely. Also, they chanted evil, sibilant runes that were designed to charm away the magician's memory and cause him to forget his magic. Sore was the travail of Mauld Webb as he fought the serpent fires and runes, and blood mingled with the sweat of his brow from that endeavor. But still, as the bolts struck nearer and the singing loudened, he kept uttering the unforgotten word, and the word still protected him. Now, above the snaky chanting, he heard the deep hiss of the cauldron, boiling more turbulently than before, because of those matters which he had added to its contents. And he saw, between the ever-writhing bolts, that a more voluminous vapor, dark as the steam of a primal fen, was mounting from the cauldron and spreading throughout the alchemy. Soon, the Ispazars were immersed in the fumes, as in a cloud of darkness, and dimly they began to coil and twist, convulsing with a strange agony. The python flames died out on the air, and the hissings of the Ispazars became inarticulate as those of common serpents. Then, falling to the floor, while the black mist gathered and thickened above them, they crawled to and fro on their bellies in the fashion of true reptiles, and, emerging at times from the vapor, they shrank and dwindled as if hellfire had consumed them. All this was even as Mauld Webb had planned. He knew that the Ispazars had forgotten their sorcery and science, and a swift devolution, flinging them back to the lowest state of serpenthood, had come upon them through the action of the vapor. But, before the completion of the change, he admitted one of the seven Ispazars to the sphere that now served to protect him from the fumes. The creature fawned at his feet like a tame dragon, acknowledging him for its master. Then, presently, the cloud of vapor began to lift, and he saw the other Ispazars, who were now little larger than fen snakes. Their wings had withered into useless frills, and they crept and hissed on the floor, amid the alembics and crucibles and anthonors of their lost science. Mauld Webb regarded them for a little, not without pride in his own sorcery. The struggle had been difficult, even dangerous, and he reflected that his boredom had been thoroughly overcome, at least for the nonce. From a practical standpoint, he had done well, for, in ridding the flower women of their persecutors, he had also eradicated a possible future menace to his own dominion over the worlds of the three suns. Turning to that Ispazar which he had spared for a necessary purpose, he seated himself firmly astride its back, behind the thick jointing of the vans. He spoke a magic word that was understood by the monster. Bearing him between its wings, it rose and flew obediently through one of the windows, and leaving behind it forever the citadel that was not to be scaled by man, nor by any wingless creature. It carried the magician over the red horns of the Sable Mountains, across the valley where dwelt the sisterhood of floral vampires, and descended on the mossy knoll at the end of that silver drawbridge whereby he had entered Voltop. There Mauld Webb dismounted, and followed by the crawling Ispazar, he began his return journey to Zykarpf through the hueless cloud, above the multidimensional deeps. Midway in that peculiar transit, he heard a sharp, sudden clapping of wings. It ceased with remarkable abruptness, and was not repeated. Looking back, he found that the Ispazar had fallen from the bridge, and was vanishing brokenly amid irreconcilable angles, in the gulf from which there was no return. This is the end of The Flower Women by Clark Ashton Smith.